It would run through 18 Iowa counties and carry millions of gallons of crude oil from North Dakota to Illinois. This hour, the proposed Bakken Pipeline. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We start off by talking with a representative of the company that is to build the pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners. We'll also hear from one landowner whose land it may cross. We'll learn about the possible environmental impact of any oil spill and the economic impact in terms of construction jobs. Different perspectives on the proposed Bakken Pipeline. What's your view? First, this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's a pipeline that is proposed to run through 18 Iowa counties, a multi-billion dollar project that would carry millions of gallons of crude oil, Bakken crude oil, from North Dakota to Illinois. The Dakota Access Oil Pipeline, also called, better known as the Bakken Pipeline, could be reviewed and approved by the Iowa Utilities Board without input or influence from the legislature. So this hour, we want to learn about this proposed pipeline, talk with those for and against it, and learn about its potential economic and environmental impact and how Iowa legislators are getting involved. Now, the company seeking to build the oil pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners, ETP, just completed informational meetings across the state. Now ETP must file the paperwork seeking a permit to build. So first of all, let's hear from a representative of the company, ETP, that wants to build the pipeline. Joey Mahmood is Senior Vice President of Energy Transfer Partners. He joins us from Houston, Texas. Hello, Joey.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being on. Start us off, Joey. Why is it necessary to build this pipeline?
The pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline, it's really pretty simple. It's going to provide a conduit or a pipeline to connect the production areas in North Dakota to the refining areas along the Gulf Coast of the United States and to other major markets via connection in the Patoka, Illinois area. So it's a direct link connecting our domestically produced crude oil to U.S. refineries.
Mm-hmm. I said millions of gallons of crude, but for those of us not in the oil business, it's how much oil does this represent that will be transported through the Midwest and through Iowa?
Well, so there's 42 gallons per barrel, number one, that will help you do your math. So this pipeline will transport approximately 450,000 barrels per day of crude oil from the Bakken and Three Forks production areas to Patoka, Illinois, where it will then be redistributed to other markets within the United States. And the ultimate design capacity, or if we are successful in increasing the capacity, could be up to 570,000 barrels per day.
Okay, so it'll stretch all across our state of Iowa. What will it look like on the landscape?
Well, actually, you won't even see it. So this pipeline is buried, number one. So when we build the pipeline, you will obviously be able to see it during construction. But it's a 30-inch pipeline in diameter, and it will be buried a minimum of 36 inches below the surface and up to 60 inches in certain areas like river crossings or stream crossings. In ag areas, it will actually be buried up to 48 inches or 4 feet below the surface. So the only places that you would see this pipeline are at pump stations that are located along the pipeline to actually move the crude, and there's one pump station proposed in Iowa.
So it's buried deep enough so that a farmer whose land it goes through can just farm right over it, not worried about any farm implements cutting into it or messing anything up?
That's correct, and that's the whole reason we bury the pipeline below 48 inches is to provide that cover, that safe cover, so when the farmers are actually working in their fields, that their implements or their equipment, they do not go that deep into the soil when they're plowing or working in their field.
Now, we've all noticed crude oil prices dropping and our gas at the gasoline stations in free fall recently here in Iowa, below $2 a gallon in some cases. Doesn't that impact the economics thinking behind this project and the fact that it makes sense to have gasoline and oil prices dropping the way they are? It seems to be quite a bit of oil out there.
That's a pretty complicated question. In short, I mean, let's all be thankful that we have cheap gas prices at the pump, so it benefits all Americans to have those reduced prices right now. Long term, this pipeline is subscribed under long-term contracts, and a long-term contract could be anywhere from 5 to, say, 15 years. The producers who actually own the oil, so Energy Transfer or Dakota Access Pipeline, we do not own the oil in the pipeline. We're a transporter, so think of this pipeline as an interstate highway. The crude oil that's transported is owned by the producers. So we have contracts, and we've signed these long-term contracts with the producers who own the oil to transport the product. So the pipeline is subscribed, fully subscribed, based on the capacity that was available when we were marketing the pipeline. So it will be utilized, or at least the producers have committed to us to transport their crude on this pipeline, starting when we go into service in the latter part of 2016.
Mm-hmm. You said we will not even notice the pipeline. It will be buried a yard or more under the surface of the ground, but it has to be constructed. How long will it take to construct, and how many jobs are there?
So construction of the pipeline will start, or at least we're anticipating to start, sometime in the first quarter of 2016. We will finish construction sometime in the third quarter of 2016. So the construction will actually take anywhere from a minimum of 7 months and a maximum of, say, 9 to 10 months. Construction of the line, there will be anywhere between 8,000 and 12,000 temporary jobs for the entire pipeline. And in Iowa specifically, there will be somewhere between 2,000 and 4,000, depending on how we contract the construction of the line. Right now, it's probably leaning on the heavier side of that to construct the pipeline in that shortened window of construction.
So possibly 4,000 jobs here in Iowa. But there's speculation that Iowa doesn't at present have the skilled workers to build this pipeline. So these would be primarily imported workers?
That's a great question. So 50% of the population, the workforce population that will work on this project, will be from the local union hall resources. We have committed to working with the unions located in Iowa in that region to source the labor to build this pipeline from the local resources.
One criticism is that the pipeline is merely moving oil through the state and providing no benefit to Iowans, aside from those constructing it. So why should Iowans be in favor of it?
This is a pipeline that benefits all Americans. It's not just a pipeline that moves crude oil from North Dakota to the refineries and then the crude oil doesn't get consumed. You and I, as everyday users of crude oil derivatives or crude oil gasoline, paints, plastics. Crude oil and crude derivatives are the foundation of a lot of products that we use as everyday consumers. Our society, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on what side of the fence you're on, is very dependent upon crude oil for our way of life. So this project, although it doesn't deliver crude oil directly into Iowa, it does provide crude oil to the country for refineries for further use and consumption by the citizens of Iowa as well as the rest of the United States.
If you just joined us, I'm talking with Joey Mahmood, Senior Vice President of Energy Transfer Partners, talking about the proposed Bakken pipeline, actually called the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline, that could run through 18 Iowa counties. Construction in plan for 2016, a multi-billion dollar project carrying millions of gallons of crude oil from North Dakota to Illinois through this pipeline in Iowa. The environment, a concern for those who are not wanting this pipeline to run through Iowa. What do you see as the biggest environmental risks that you are guarding against in building this pipeline? A spill would have to be number one, right?
Sure, and we do. When we're routing the pipeline, we go through many different iterations or routing scenarios. When we look at the pipe, where it lays on the land and how we get from point A to point B, one of the primary considerations we look at is how does it affect or how does it interact or could it interact with the human environment, and that means with you and I as humans, and then the environment being the natural landscape where the pipeline traverses. So where we cross rivers, where we cross wetlands or sensitive habitats, we route the pipeline to either avoid those areas or to minimize impacts to those areas.
So for instance, there on the point of the rivers, it would cross both rivers that border Iowa, the Mississippi and the Missouri. How do you get a pipeline to carry oil safely across those bodies of water?
That's a great question. And so when we were installing the pipeline, we actually install it via what's called a horizontal directional drill. So when we put the pipeline in, we're actually drilling very deep, greater than 50 feet below the depth of the water. So if the water is 50 foot, we'll be at least 100 foot below the surface.
We'll probably be
a lot deeper than that.
Sorry, just so I understand, through the river bed, not through the water.
That's correct. So we're beneath the water. So on each side, as we approach the river, we have a certain setback, and then we start to drill and the pipe. So it, as it's approaching the river's edge, it's actually making an angle and going deeper and deeper and deeper, and then it goes underneath the water, underneath the riverbed, and then it comes back up on the other side. We have and we install valves on each side of those rivers to isolate. So if we did have a leak or something was to happen to our pipeline, we could quickly isolate that river crossing to minimize any impact to those rivers. We do the same thing for not just the major water bodies, also for all the water bodies where we're approaching a creek or a stream that may flow into the Missouri or the Mississippi. We actually install valves to isolate those segments as well.
Mm-hmm. And this would cover the case because there have been oil spills that have happened because of floods in the Midwest. This would protect us also in times of floods?
Well, it would, and you know, those pipelines that ruptured in the past, those pipelines were installed many years ago. So they would, first and foremost, they weren't deep. So when we put in a pipeline, we're very far below the river bed and the water. So when the rivers flood, typically our valves and our points that we enter going beneath the river are set far enough back from the edge of the water that when the waters flood, they come out of the banks, our valves are set back so they provide a buffer between the river's edge and where our valve body is sitting. So if we did have an issue, we can isolate that section so it would minimize or not affect that flooded zone. That's usually how the new pipelines are installed. The older pipelines, they were installed prior to conventional, or they were using conventional techniques and maybe not horizontal directional drills, so they were buried shallower where they're more susceptible to those conditions.
Nevertheless, even with new technology, we can minimize the hazard, the risk, but I don't think we could completely eliminate it. As the chair of the Iowa's Senate Judiciary Committee, Rob Hoag of Cedar Rapids, says if our state is going to allow this oil to pass under our farm fields, that you, the pipeline operators, should be required to provide adequate financial guarantees in case something goes wrong. Given that pipeline spills in other states have resulted in hundreds of millions of dollars of environmental damage, would ETP, your company, be responsible if there were a spill?
We would, plain and simple. And you're right, we cannot absolutely guarantee that there would never be a spill. We would never say that. We do employ many safeguards in our pipeline design, in our installation and construction to minimize those potentials. We utilize heavier wall pipe through those sensitive areas to give us that added protection. We utilize automated valves to remotely control our pipeline. So if we did have a situation where there was an incident, we could quickly isolate and close off the system. We employ many safeguards for monitoring where we fly and we evaluate, and we're on the ground looking at our pipelines to make sure that they're safe. But say that there was an event where there was a spill, our company and our partners are liable for any impacts that would occur to the environment or personal property and for the cleanup. And we're absolutely willing to stand behind that. We have not only our company and our reputation and our financial resources to help us through an incident of that nature, but we also have insurance, and we also contribute and are part of various federal programs that would step in the event that we couldn't control or remediate the spill, that the government would then take over and basically handle the cleanup, and then our company would reimburse the government for those expenses. So we are liable and fully accept that responsibility.
I wonder, how have landowners been reacting to the process so far that you've been through in getting this pipeline approved?
Overall, it's a, you know, squeaky wheel gets the grease, is the saying, right? So the vast majority of the right-of-way is actually people are not against it. Overall, we have around 80% survey permission out of 1,594 tracts of land. So 80% of those, the landowners have given us voluntary survey permission. We are just starting the actual procurement of easements along the right-of-way. So I can't tell you, you know, how many people have signed up or have not signed up, because we're just in the infancy of getting that started.
Mm-hmm. I understand the earliest that your company can file a petition to build this pipeline is the 16th of January. That's a month after the public hearings about the proposal ended. Is that when you expect to file a petition?
It is. So sometime around on or around the 16th of January, we will file our petition to the IUB. Mm-hmm. And we'll go through the process, and during that period, we'll continue to work with the landowners to, one, finish out the surveys, and two, to start procuring those easements.
And finally, let's talk briefly about eminent domain, because some landowners are not willing to go along with this project. So a top concern with it has been the potential use of eminent domain, which would allow your company, in this case, to take private property for the public's benefit in exchange for fair market compensation. After meeting with landowners, will you pursue ETP, pursue eminent domain powers in parts of the state if the petition is approved?
I'll tell you, from a company perspective, we very rarely rely upon eminent domain to do our business. We have a very good working relationship with the landowners where we traverse. We do not rely upon eminent domain to conduct our business, and that's an absolute last resort. Is it reasonable to think that we're going to have 100% voluntary easements? Probably not. We hope it is, but probably not. And in those rare cases, then we will certainly have to rely upon the power of eminent domain if we're able to secure it from the IUB.
Mm-hmm. Now, Iowa legislators have been voicing their opinions about this pipeline, talking also about the possibility of passing legislation in the upcoming session regarding eminent domain and regulations to ensure that our state is adequately compensated should there be a problem with the pipeline that you would build. Is Energy Transfer Partners present in Des Moines at our legislature speaking for your interests during the upcoming session?
Well, we certainly have our lobbyists and our interest groups representing our positions. We believe in personal property rights, and we believe in energy infrastructure. So we're certainly voicing our opinion where necessary.
Okay, thank you very much. Joey Mahmood is Senior Vice President of Energy Transfer Partners in Houston. Thank you very much for this conversation.
Oh, you're welcome. We really appreciate the opportunity to give you information about our project.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Talking this hour about the proposed Bakken Pipeline. This is a multi-billion dollar project that would run 343 miles through 18 Iowa counties and carry millions of gallons of crude oil from North Dakota to Illinois, a total of about 1,100 miles along. Still to come, we want to talk about the economic impact with Dave Swenson, also the environmental impact. What would happen if there would be a spill? But first of all, I want to mention, if you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9000. 9100, 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. What are your questions, your concerns about the proposed Bakken pipeline through Iowa? This is not the Keystone Pipeline. That's further west. This is the one that would run through Iowa. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook. You can make a comment or pose a question on our Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's talk with Matthew Crow. Matthew his family owns a family farm in Donelson, Iowa. Donelson in the southeast corner of the state. Matthew Crow, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi. We've got a few minutes. Tell us, would the pipeline run through your family's land?
Yes, it does. It cuts directly through a pasture behind my mother's house, and then it winds up maybe, from what I saw of the surveyor's flags, about 150 feet from my back door.
Mm-hmm. So there have been surveyors out there from ETP out on your land talking to you? Or?
Not on our land. They were allowed on some neighbor's land, and I wasn't there when it happened, but came home and saw a string of flags.
Mm-hmm.
But we have not allowed them on our land. No, not yet.
We heard
not
from
until we have to.
We heard from the vice president of that company that so far he estimates 80% of the landowners in favor of it who would be affected. Are you in favor of this?
No, at all, not at all. And I find that figure a little hard to believe, based on what I saw at the public meeting that we went to in December.
What did you see?
An awful lot of objection. I would say 50-50 at best. Most of the people that I saw speaking in favor of it, as near as I could tell, were people that had an axe to grind. Heard a lot from the Pipe Fitters Union. And I don't know. I have nothing to back that up. This is
okay.
Just my perception of what I saw.
Okay, we've just got a couple minutes left before we have to take a break. Give it to me, your biggest concerns here. Why are you against it?
Well, my biggest concern is basically environmental. I'm fairly convinced that it will fail somewhere, sometime, and there will be a horrendous release of petroleum into the land. And I am not convinced that that can ever be cleaned up, no matter how much money they pour into it.
Mm-hmm.
They're running it under the Mississippi, which is our sole source of drinking water for a huge radius around here. And I'm not sure what they propose to do if that goes south, but I don't know. I guess I'm just a diehard skeptic when it comes to claims of a handful of people that are going to make a huge profit and not have to be present to deal with living with it.
Would you stand, you and your family stand to profit from it if it did run through that land?
Well, I'm sure it would be chump change and nowhere near worth the risk. I have no idea what kind of money they're talking about, but there is no amount of money that would interest me in this. They're going to have to eminent domain me all the heck.
Mm. But what about property value? Do you think it lowers property value in the area surrounding the pipeline's path?
I think it probably does, and I have heard from several people in the run-up towards that meeting that they contacted their insurance agents and were informed that if a pipeline ran through their property, that they'd be immediately dropped. The representative of the pipeline company insisted that that wasn't true, but I don't know why these people would be lying.
Mm. Matthew Crow, we have to take a break. Thank you very much for giving us, in a nutshell, your concerns, your opposition to the proposed Bakken pipeline. Thank you, Matthew Crow.
Well, thank you very much.
Talking about the proposed Bakken pipeline, stay with us. We're going to continue after the break. A multi-million-dollar project running over 340 miles through Iowa, 18 counties, millions of gallons of crude oil flowing from North Dakota to Illinois. What's your view on this? 1-866-780-9100. We are going to dig into those environmental concerns when we come back with a professor of geosciences. We'll find out the answer to that. What if? What if there were an oil spill? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this snowy Tuesday in Iowa. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Talking this hour about a proposed pipeline, the so-called Bakken Pipeline. It's a multi-billion dollar project that would run over 340 miles through 18 Iowa counties, carrying millions of gallons of crude eventually from North Dakota to Illinois. 1,100 miles in total length, 340 some through Iowa. Earlier in the program, we talked with a representative of Energy Transfer Partners. This is the company based in Dallas that would be building this pipeline proposed for 2016. A lot of interest in this from our listeners, judging by our Facebook page and by our phones. We want to mention that the Iowa Utilities Board is still accepting public comment on this proposed pipeline. You can leave comments if you go to their website. Simply search for Iowa Public Utilities Board. And we want to get to phones a little bit later in the hour. 1-866-780-9100. Go to our Facebook page if you'd like to have a question or leave a comment. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, tweet us at IPR Talk. So, what would be the environmental impact of any spill that might occur? The representative of the company Energy Transfer Partners couldn't rule out, no matter how many precautions are taken, the possibility of some sort of break in this massive pipeline. Bruno Basso is with us, associate professor of geosciences at Michigan State University. Bruno Basso, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're an environmental scientist with expertise in this area. Tell us, they say they would take responsibility if such a thing could happen. That what would be the consequences of any oil spill on land from this underground pipeline?
That's a good news about the responsibility. I obviously can't give any good news about the environmental impact of an oil spillage. If oil spills on an agricultural soil, like some of the best productive soils in Iowa, it can certainly transform these productive soils in toxic and unproductive, and mainly because it will restrict the flow of water. The permeability of the soil increases just because these organic hydrocarbons, the oil being denser than the water, it will occupy all the soil pores and expels water and air, which obviously are mandatory for any crops and roots to be able to grow deeper and use water and nutrients. In addition to that, because of the lack of the water, pores occupied by the oil will also not allow, nutrients to be taken up, so the soil fertility, it's obviously decreased. A long story short, crops cannot grow if there is an oil spill.
Mm. And what about our groundwater supplies? That where this may be, would it affect that?
If there is a spill, it would certainly affect the contamination of the groundwater being denser and floating and all that. The depth plays a big role. If it is close to the the surface, it will certainly decrease the just production completely, just because they will even stop the flow of water to the groundwater. It will create any impermeable layer. So that's more talking about the first basically 2 meters of soil, like to 12 to 15 feet or so. Roots can reach down there, especially in droughts. Normally, they will grow in the first part of the soil up to 6 feet. So, if the pipe is way down deeper, close to the groundwater, it may not necessarily affect the production of the crops, but it will certainly affect the groundwater, especially being used for water.
Mm-hmm. And the representative said, I think he said something like 3 feet underground in some areas deeper, but 3 feet, does that sound deep enough for...
3 feet will not even be close to be safe for a crop production. Roots will reach at least a meter and a half, so basically 3 to 5 feet, especially in those good Iowa soils. So 3 feet is a very shallow depth for this kind of pipes. Deeper, it's a little bit of completely different in terms of the effects on the crops, but it will have certainly effects on the potential contamination of the groundwater.
Mm-hmm. How should we think of cleanup should there be a spill?
Would it look like the oil we see on beaches from oil spills in the oceans?
Yes, and obviously there are you know, mechanisms and that could clean the spill, but they're still not what you really would like to see in the soil, mainly because these degreaser, as they call, or detergents, are made out of salt, and just the reason they need to break the bounds of, you know, the molecule of oil. And so this additional incoming quantity of involuntary fluid like these salts will certainly contaminate, you know, the soils. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it will potentially get rid of the oil by flushing. But as you can imagine, where the flushes goes, it goes straight down into the groundwater. I think it's just the environmental impact is it's really, really big.
And quickly, we have a few other guests we want to hear from, Bruno. Please stay with us, though. But I wanted to say we haven't even addressed the impact that it would have on wildlife. We've been speaking just about agriculture, haven't we?
Exactly. They come together because... Imagine, you know, wildlife not be able to eat, you know, some of the food or be, you know, drinking contaminated water. So, unfortunately, the environmental impact, again, it will pay its big price.
Stay with us, Bruno Basso, if you could. We may have some questions for you from our listeners. Associate Professor of Geosciences at Michigan State University. Joining us as well for the end of this hour as we discuss the Bakken pipeline, the proposed multi-billion-dollar project that would put a pipeline across Iowa. Richie Schmidt is with us, a field representative of Laborers International Union of North America. Richie Schmidt, hello.
Hello.
He's in our Des Moines studio. Dave Swenson is with us in our Ames studio, scientist in the economics department at Iowa State University. Welcome back to our show, Dave.
Thank you.
Let's go quickly to Richie. What about these conversations about jobs? We heard in the first half hour some approaching 4,000 jobs for here in Iowa. What conversations have you had with ETP and what has been agreed or promised?
First of all, thanks for having me on the show. There has been conversations as far as using union labor, I think, as you probably heard earlier on the show from Energy Transfer Partners. There has been conversations. As far as I know, there's been a letter of intent to... You know, if this pipeline were to be constructed, that they would use a union contractor as part of a pipeline contractors association to build it. So what that means is, you know, a union pipeline contractor is going to be a party to a collective bargaining agreement between unions and the contractor. And in those agreements, there are specific language about manpower needs and where the manpower comes from.
Are you in favor of this, given also the reservations?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a
pipeline
construction.
Yeah, what tips the balance in favor? Simply a matter of jobs?
I don't think it's limited to just jobs. As far as LIUNA goes, my organization, we're pretty confident just with the training programs that we have in place that we feel good about, you know, the construction of the pipeline. It's going to be built safe. It's going to be built up to the required standards. So as far as environmental impact and any concerns there are minimal if coming from my side of the table.
Okay, Richie Schmidt, you also stay with us. Dave Swenson, time is running out of us, but I've got to ask you about this economic and fiscal impact study prepared by Strategic Economics Group for a company owned by this Dallas-based ETP, Energy Transfer Partners, study projecting a lot of figures here, over $600 million circulating through the Iowa economy, over some $400 million almost in additional indirect growth, production sales, 7,600 jobs during a two-year construction period, a lot of other figures. What should we make of this study, which it was commissioned by the company that is wanting the business? So what should we make of this study?
Well, what we should make of this study is that you have to be a savvy reviewer to get the right information out of it. The study, as initially reported by many media organizations, locked in on the 7,600 jobs and something like $1.1 billion worth of total economic activity associated with that. The researchers used a convention called reporting the numbers in something called job years, as if all of this spending occurred in one calendar year. Well, we know that this project is going to take more than one calendar year, and the proper way to report economic impacts is to report it by calendar year within which the economic activity takes place. So initially, what you would do is divide all those numbers by two, and you would get something like 3,800 total jobs after everything multiplied through, and something like $550 million worth of stimulated output. But that's just my first concern with this study, and it has to do with the reporting. That's the way it should have been reported initially, and that's not the way that it was reported. The second thing that I have in this study is that the researchers assumed a substantial fraction, as much as 10%, of the very high precision pipe and fittings and pumps required for this project would and could be manufactured in Iowa. If you search the American Pipeline Institute's catalog, however, you cannot find a company in the Midwest that produces this 30-inch pipe, nor any of the other critical components into this. So their assumption that there would be manufacturing impacts was also flawed, and that accounted for about 16% of their job totals after you work all of that through the economy. And then lastly, when I look at this, Iowa has a pipeline construction industry, but it's relatively small. There are 34 firms with 245 workers in those firms, and they primarily take care of natural gas extensions to commercial and residential activities and of course, to industries. We don't have the civil engineering type of capacity and years of experience for large pipelines like this. My conclusion then is that this pipeline will require major project managers in engineering and in construction who will come in from out of state, will bring a healthy fraction of their most skilled workforce, especially supervisory workforce, with them on the project. And then they will subcontract in the state of Iowa for the required necessary skilled labor. Now, the ETP person basically validated that the modeling or the report that they did assumed that 100% of the construction activity would be let to Iowa firms, therefore to Iowa workers. What we heard in the previous discussion earlier in the program is their goal is about 50%. Mm-hmm. So here's where we are. They said something like 2,000 to 4,000 jobs. They've gotten the message that they shouldn't be reporting this 7,600 job total. He said, Mr. Mahmood said that the numbers would be on towards the 4,000 end. I'm arguing that the numbers are going to be very much closer to the 2,000 end. Now, that said, though, there's going to be sizable short-term economic impacts in parts of Iowa. As a consequence of this, they're just not going to be as large as has been supposed.
Mm-hmm. As a short-term meaning, something like 2 years.
Like 2 years. And remember, it's not just 2 years. This thing is marching across the state of Iowa. It's a little bit in this county and a little bit in this mm-hmm. county and a little bit in this county. It's not going to make a big dent in Iowa's economy, if really at all. It's important, and I'm not minimizing that, and the opportunity, especially for the construction sector, to find work. That in and of itself is important. But this thing is not as big as many people believe. Now, the issue on this, of course, is we use or people will use these job impact numbers to try to influence the thinking of politicians and regulators. My job on this thing was to try to figure out how much of this research we can hang our hat on and whether we need to ratchet it down to make sure that politicians, again, and regulators are making decisions on information that's more reasonable.
Okay, Dave Swenson, Richie Schmidt, and Bruno Basso, our phones are all lit up. Let's try to get to as many calls as possible. And I'll ask all participants to be brief, right to the point. Barbara in Iowa City, right to the point with you. What do you think about this proposed pipeline?
This is Barbara Schlachter with 100 Grannies for a Livable Future in Iowa City. And what I think about the pipeline is that it's a very short-term way of looking at things. We know that climate change is real and that we need to do everything we can to stop the burning of fossil fuels, not make it easier to burn them faster, which is what this pipeline would do. In addition, there's no guarantee that this crude oil is going to stay in the United States. It's all risk and no gain. The European Union is looking to change regulations that would allow crude oil to be exported. They want some of this Bakken crude oil. And I don't think that it's fair to the people of Iowa to be used as simply a piece of land that is of no consequence. These are people's lives and livelihoods. And we are all affected by climate change, not just the people who might be living in the worst places, which okay. are very significant, of course. We're all affected by it.
Thank you, Barbara. In Iowa City, you said representing 100 grannies for a livable future. Thank you for calling in. Let's go to Nate in Cedar Rapids. Nate, welcome to our program. Not much time. What's your point?
Sure. I've always been curious why it makes sense to build like a 1,100-mile pipeline as opposed to putting a refinery or, you know, something that consumes the crude in the area that it's being produced. Mm. It makes more sense from Alaska, but if we're going to, you know, produce it, shouldn't it be refined in North? I'm curious.
Okay, but Mike, I don't know if we have the expertise to answer that. Dave Swenson, do you have any idea there?
Sure. Things like commodities like this oftentimes are, well, first of all, they go to places where it's the redistribution of the commodity. So when crude oil is made into all of the products that crude oil can be made into, then it's how close are the major markets that are demanding those products. Way up in North Dakota, nobody's demanding anything up there. You need to get closer to major urban areas, major demand for motor vehicle gasolines, major demand for chemical inputs or petrochemical inputs, those types of firms. So you're going to move the crude to a place where it can be split or cracked or transformed into a value-added product and then efficiently distributed out to much more dense urban areas.
Comment from you also, Dave, before we have to go, the Keystone pipeline. That's not this system. It's the Keystone one receiving national press attention, controversy. That system from Canada, it runs from Western Canada and Alberta to refineries in Illinois and in Texas, but is west of this proposal, right? Do the economics of that controversial pipeline, how do they compare with this one that is?
Well, if you measure them the same way, the economics are relatively similar. The Keystone XL pipeline used what was called national multipliers, as if this pipeline had a national economic impact. These researchers primarily used state-level multipliers. The reason is that the larger your geography for doing this kind of economic research, the higher the multipliers. You can understand why somebody might therefore want to use a national multiplier if they're trying to sway national decision makers. But overall, these pipelines are about exactly the same length. Keystone XL is 1,180 miles. This one's 1,130 miles. In general, it's the same kind of pipe. It's the same kind of process. It's the same kind of activity. And it's the same kind of short-term economic impact. And once completed, neither one of these projects has more than two dozen workers associated with the project after they're completed.
Mike in Boone, we've got just a minute or so left. You'll be the last caller we take. Mike, hi.
Hi.
Your view on this?
Pretty much the same as the rest of those that are against it. I've worked for 30 years for U.S. West outside as a cable tech in the dirt, and I see what happens. I've seen what happens to stuff buried all my career, so they'll never convince me these pipelines are not going to fail. Mm-hmm. Plus, I live downriver a couple miles from where that thing crosses the river, and I'm really worried about what's going to happen to my beautiful river valley if they get a big leak in that, because the oil can run down the trench, just like water does. That trench will never be the same. Oil, water, everything will be flowable through that trench, so even if it leaks 5 miles from the river, it can still flow down that trench to the river or to someone's farmland. There's got to be other alternatives.
Okay. Mike in Boone, have you gone to Iowa Public Utilities Board to do a comment there? Anybody can do that, even though the informational meetings are gone. Mike, thank you for your call. I want to put that out there. You can leave comments at the Iowa Public Utilities Board website. We have run out of time for this. Dave Swenson, any closing words for us, points that we should consider that you didn't tap on to as much as you'd like to have?
No, what's most important is that policymakers are using the right kind of information to make the right kind of decisions. And so long as economic impact studies are reflective of reality, then we can feel confident that those two things are going together and the decisions are made with good information.
Mm-hmm. Bruno Basso, do we now know everything we need to know about environmental impact of what a spill would
Yes, I think science is on top of things in quantifying the very negative impact of an oil spill, both on the short-term and the long-term, again, on the agriculture and all the, you know, related activities, including wildlife. So it's the long-term consequences. That's pretty scary.
Okay, Richie Schmidt, you're still in favor of this pipeline, hearing all these concerns?
Yeah. I don't think any of these concerns that we've heard today are anything new. I still think it's important. And to Mr. Swenson's point, I think I couldn't agree more. The right information needs to be put out to the public. But what also gets lost in the conversation is whether it's 2,000 jobs, 4,000 jobs, 1,000 jobs, the fact of the matter is that construction has a transient nature. Take, for instance, you know, there's a fertilizer plant that they're building.
We've got to go. We don't have time for an example. I'm sorry. Richie Schmidt, thank you for coming into our Des Moines studio. Field representative with Laborers International Union of North America, Dave Swenson of Iowa State University, Bruno Basso, environmental scientist at Michigan State. Thank you very much, and thank you for the callers. Conversation continues on our Facebook page. Please leave a comment there. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth, John Pemble, and Garrett Van Leeuwen helped us out. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.